It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland on the ride, as always, with the Sound Mind broadcast, and Daniel Pryor. Good afternoon, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Hey, this week getting into a subject that you've addressed at times in other programs, but you want to focus back in on the importance of the role of the family of origin, or as I often see it in your notes, the Foo.
Yeah.
Is that where Foo Fighters get their name, or the family of origin?
I don't know.
Who knows? Whole different subject. But the subject of the family of origin and how it affects us, particularly you find how it affects marriages. Mm-hmm. You've had a number of experiences in counseling with people on their second, third marriages, and it always seems to get back to family of origin issues.
And it does in the first marriage, too, but it's just one of these things that it has really an impact and on our choice of spouses and the whole process of the marriage, how it goes, probably the odds that it's going to work out, and because there's a lot of factors, and we'll talk about a lot of them in the show here today, but it's surprising how much of an impact that has and just continues to have through the years, and I think it's really helpful for people to kind of get a glimpse of that, understand a bit about that, and so that they kind of, you know the root of the problem, and not only the root of my problem, but understand that my wife comes from a family where, you know, she's unlearning values and communication systems and things that didn't, that are dysfunctional when we got together.
The bad stuff. Now, obviously, a good family is going to impart some good things to your life. It's just not all stuff we need to unlearn. But
yeah, and I think actually when we go into the family of origin, we tend to go there to find problems. But but certainly we all carry strengths and the best part of our parents along with kind of the worst part. And we often joke about that, you know, with our daughter, you know, she got the best part of my wife and the worst part of me or something like that. And we tend to, you know, we sort of get some of the really good stuff from our parents and unfortunately some of the bad stuff. And even family of origin even affects our choice for a spouse. And I think that that's something that is always kind of takes people by surprise. And we start to talk about the subtle ways in which it does that. And particularly when I'm talking to people who have been through a situation where it's maybe the second marriage or sometimes even the third marriage. And I've even seen people on their fourth marriage where they just
keep making the same mistake.
They keep making the same mistake and they keep obviously being attracted to people who have maybe been previously married and continue to make the same mistake. So going into it, you always want to think the best of that person that you're hoping to marry, and we do put our best foot forward when we're courting and dating, and then afterwards, you know, after we tie the knot, so to speak, then we find out that there are some problems. So there's a lot of wisdom, I think, in getting information first, and at least which doesn't disqualify a person, but you certainly need to go into it knowing these, because marriage is for change, and that's one of the things that we need to see up front, that it has the potential of changing us. It has the purpose of changing us. And so just because we see someone that's got some rough edges, you know, so I've heard this from other people, and certainly it was the case with my wife, where when she married me, she would say this early on in our marriage, you know, that I really felt that you had potential that you wouldn't meet if you didn't have help. So, you know, you're looking at the person. A lot of times it's the gal looking at
not something that they should do. You shouldn't get involved with somebody that you can fix or that you want to fix.
No, that but people do, and the thing is that they learn kind of too late that that's what they did. There doesn't seem to be a recipe for the perfect marriage. And so they have a lot of these who is the kind of the guru. It's kind of like a married couple. I forget the name. It's kind of in my mind floating around here, but Gottman.
Right.
Okay. So they, the Gottmans have, kind of the personality tests and things that, but it's after the fact, sort of, you know, so now that you're married, here's the odds that you'll make it or the odds that you won't or something like that.
Would you say it's pretty important, though, I mean, this, you are a Bible-based counselor, that we don't do the missionary dating. We, first and foremost, you want to try and marry somebody who is a Christian. Don't you think that's pretty, pretty important?
Yeah, because the thing about the missionary dating is, I think when we're dating, we're not really honest with ourselves. It's, you know, we're not. We're being drawn to the person. Generally speaking, there's an infatuation there that we're being, and that's not what is going to be the foundation of the marriage. The foundation of the marriage is going to be a kind of love that's very different, and so that infatuation is going to go. As soon as you start picking up the other person's underwear, and you know, all these kinds of things, the infatuation is going to, you know, like the cake in the rain. It's going to go. So there's another marrying, so that's a, like, kind of an emotional move, I think, for the most part. You know, I'm going to, you know, the person's not saved, but I'm going to marry the person and convert the
person.
Not
to say that occasionally that works out. That person becomes a Christian eventually, but it's probably decision number one is to steer clear of that. I mean, you're inviting lots of unpredictable things and problems if you don't.
And we'd like to think that it would work out. And maybe theoretically, from our understanding of Scripture, we might, you know, tell ourselves, you know, it should always work out, but so often it doesn't work out.
So putting that aside, we agree then you should try and marry someone who's also a believer. So that's a given.
There will be enough problems already, you know, even with that.
Yeah.
So even beginning with our choice of spouse, and that choice of spouse has to do maybe with the values that I grew up with, and so I intuit those same values in the other person. But let's talk about the values that I grew up with, because, and I've said before, as parents, we don't pass on the values we wish we had. We only pass on the values we have. So when I'm looking at a person and I say that I intuit certain values about that person, don't make the mistake of thinking that those are always good values, because sometimes we can equate this to distances too. Say, for example, one value that a young man, for example, might learn growing up is to disrespect women. Now, his dad might not overtly disrespect women, but it may slip out at times that, in fact, he doesn't have a lot of respect for women. Like, I know of a situation where the father taught his sons, if you ever disrespect your mother or your sisters, boy, I will deal with you harshly. But then he would get caught in situations and he'd blame it on, quote unquote, some dumb woman. So underneath his kind of the pretense of respecting women, he had a disrespect for women, and that's the value that he passed on to his sons, not the pretentious one.
Right.
So a lot of times, so the sons then would go out and they would intuit gals who did not respect themselves, when I say intuit, that's not a cognitive thing. You know, I wouldn't intentionally marry a woman because she didn't respect herself. But the intuition might draw me to a woman who didn't respect herself, even though I think I respect women. And then we would find out later on that there are little things that we do over the years that just engender that disrespect and cause distance. So when we say the values of the family of origin, not the stated values or the indoctrination necessarily, but the
or the stated Christian values,
correct?
Yeah, but the religious values that we all believe this.
And so there are a lot of good mothers who don't particularly have a high opinion of women because of the way that they were raised, and there are a lot of good fathers who don't particularly have a high opinion of women. Or here's another one: a father who loved his daughter, took a lot of time spending time with the daughter, and at one point in time, early on in the daughter's education, was pulled aside and told, your daughter has no self-confidence. And then he learned later on through counseling, that the value that he was passing on to her was his own lack of self-esteem. So even though he encouraged her, she had a lack of self-esteem because that's the value he held himself. The values that are modeled for us in are become kind of like what seems normal and natural to us. And so we're intuitively drawn toward people who support those same values, and they're not always good. So we wind up choosing a spouse. What's the likelihood of success? And of course, the likelihood of success is going to have to do with, a lot of things. First of all, success is relative. It's if I have modeled for me through generations before the family of origin, I have modeled for me a certain kind of relationship that men have with women. And one that we might, the stereotypical male dominance, female submission kind of thing. So if I have that modeled for me, and to me that's a successful marriage, and then I try to duplicate that. Well, so when we say success, it's not monolithic. It's not like it's a relative term. The likeliness of success is going to have to do with, is going to involve communication styles that are modeled for us, kind of modeled and then honed. It's going to have, kind of a modeled, process of interaction engagement between people. Not only mom and dad, but does dad have friends? Does mom have friends? Or, because that models confidence or the lack of. And so these all problem resolution. How were problems resolved in the family of resolution? How were problems resolved in the family of origin? A lot of times, in our family here, in our family, we just walked away and cooled off. So maybe it was never really resolved.
That sounds like a real common one.
Yeah, another one is, we just shouted and shouted until everybody got tired of shouting. And
right.
The last man standing kind of took the day.
Or we got physically violent. That's obviously, I've heard that often, that people will pick, they were abused and they pick abusers as spouses.
Mm-hmm. Because it feels normal. Mm. And normal feels secure in some twisted kind of way a lot of times.
Definitely a family of origin issue that... Yeah. You'd want to steer clear of if you could, but so often people don't, and they find themselves in a tough spot. Finding out how the family of origin affects your current relationship, your current marriage, or other relationships, it's an interesting subject, something you might need some coaching on, some help on. And if people need help, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, my phone number, 425-778-6169, and also people... email me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com, where they also find podcasts of these shows.
All of the programs, all of Daniel's great Sound Mind broadcasts. We'll return with more of this subject, the role of the family of origin, and getting into something called a genogram, how Daniel uses that in his practice. That's coming up with more of the Sound Mind broadcast.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal, or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland, this week we are looking at the subject of the role of the family of origin, how that affects our marriages, our relationships. And before the break, we mentioned something called the genogram. And what is a genogram, Daniel?
So that's just a schematic, kind of a sketch of the family, family of origin. And I have a specific use for that because if people have heard my broadcast, many of my broadcasts before, they've heard me talk about relationships as distances. Relationships are psychological and emotional distances. More on that in other shows. What I'm doing in the genogram is looking for distancing mechanisms in the family of origin. So, and because those are modeled for us, and so we tend to take those distancing mechanisms into our marriage relationship. A quick example that I use, I tell people, everyone is a Fisher-Price toy. And I'm talking about the little block or the little ball with the different shaped blocks that go into it. And so these are for toddlers. And, mm-hmm. and so we imagine that each person is a Fisher-Price toy, and these blocks, these different shaped blocks are components of psychological, emotional components of a healthy person. So imagine that a person grows up in a household where if we try to use the triangle-shaped block, everybody gets hurt. So we just don't use that at our household, and maybe we haven't for generations. We've found a way around that. So when the children grow up and they intuitively go out to form deeper relationships, they're drawn toward people that don't use the triangle-shaped block. And then after they're married, they go to counseling and complaining about, you know, well, we just don't have the triangle-shaped block in our marriage. And
I wonder what that triangle-shaped block would be.
Yeah, so they don't know how to fix it. And then the other thing is if they tried to fix it, it would be very uncomfortable. However, to be healthy, they do have to fix it. And that's where kind of the coaching and the walking alongside of and helping them to normalize things go. So I'm looking for distancing mechanisms. Now, those can be age. Say, well, my dad married my mom and he was 20 years older, or my mom was 20 years older. And
these are distancing mechanisms.
They're distancing mechanisms.
What do you mean again by a distancing mechanism?
Okay,
what is that?
So let's take a very, very extreme case. Let's take the Islamic culture where you've got a 40-year-old man marrying a 9-year-old girl. They don't even communicate at the same level. So there's a psychological and emotional distance. And what that does in a marriage, even much less than that, say 10 years can be a factor, or maybe in some marriages less and in some marriages more. But it's a psychological and emotional distance where the older person, let's say, for example, if it's a woman, a gal that's 15 years older than the husband, and maybe at some level she doesn't even expect him to communicate at her level. And so she's accepting a psychological and emotional distance. Now, why is she accepting that? Well, if I look at her family of origin, I'm going to find out that there was a distance between her mother and father in some way. Maybe he wasn't there or something. Find some distance there that set her up predisposed her to intuitively be drawn toward a person who she was in some ways ensured that there was not going to be that threat.
What would be another distancing mechanism besides age?
Culture.
Okay.
All kinds of culture. Socioeconomical culture, marrying a poor person marrying a rich person or vice versa. Now, none of these are sins.
Right.
They're just distances.
And the other word might be dysfunction.
Yeah, and when you get married, those have to be dealt with. So another one of culture would be, of course, ethnical boundaries or differences. So people who marry across ethnic distances or differences are inviting into their relationship a certain psychological and emotional distance. Now, there's nothing sinful about that or immoral, but you have to understand that this presents some problems that we're going to have to deal with.
So maybe some kind of
religious,
dependent.
Different religions or different sects of, you know, like, for example, the Catholic background is very, very different from the charismatic background. And those people bring different values to, and that's a psychological and emotional distance. Mm-hmm. Vocational choices. Communication styles, habits of the family of origin.
What about physical attractiveness? Somebody who purposely marries somebody who's not particularly attractive.
There's a song comes to mind. If you want to be happy for the rest of your life, never make a pretty woman your wife.
There you go.
There is a reason behind that intentionally marrying someone who you find unattractive. Is it because you don't want the responsibility of feeling enamored by the person? There are cultures, religious cultures, ethnic cultures, difference in races, where the person that the man married, and probably many cultures, if we go back far enough, where the person that the man married, the intention was not to be enamored by that person, but the intention was to marry someone who could run the household.
Right.
And then the man was enamored by other women.
Yeah,
and
a mistress.
A mistress or something like that. So a lot of times marrying that person who you maybe don't respect, and the fact that they are in some ways unattractive gives you permission not to respect them.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, yeah, so I think you mentioned too, social, that's a very common one. You mm-hmm. marry well the person you're supposed to marry, mm-hmm. but it's not somebody that you necessarily are that yeah. into. So
yeah, a lot of times people can marry, say a person could marry someone that's socioeconomically superior, and underneath, well, actually has a loathing for people of superior socioeconomical status, and mm-hmm. so they're marrying someone that they have permission now not to respect.
Mm-hmm. So these are all distances, and this is what the genogram gets at.
Mm-hmm.
If people like map this yeah. out with you in a counseling session, yeah. they can determine yeah. where some of these things are.
Mm-hmm. And then I see a lot of people who are like on their second, third marriage, as I said earlier, sometimes more than that. And the question comes up now. I've seen a number of people who are going to embark on yet another relationship. So maybe it's a second marriage or maybe a third marriage. And they're wondering, is there a way to guarantee that this one's going to work out? Or I see a situation where they've already married a person and they're having the same problems with this marriage that they had in a previous marriage or two previous marriages. Maybe someone in a previous marriage had an affair and now they've married someone who also had an affair or is having an affair. And so they're just kind of wondering, you know, is there any way to screen this out and know, you know, what I'm getting into?
eHarmony. There you go.
Well, so I have a short list. Oh, well. It's got to be some sort of a venue where people are being honest. But then, so I've got some things here that might be helpful.
Yeah, third time is a charm.
And then I have in my notes, is it, with a question mark. not necessarily, but it can be. One of the things that we want to look at is if we're contemplating marrying a person and they've had difficulty in relationships and we have, did he or she learn anything from their previous experience? Now, if you ask them that, they will probably say yes, but now it's important, what did they learn? So we want to look at some more specific things, and this is not by any means an exhaustive list, but it could be helpful. Does this person still have unforgiveness? That is, when I'm talking to this person, was it always the fault of their spouse, their previous spouse? And what about forgiveness? Do they always blame the other person? If they blame the other person, and there's no, you know what forgiveness comes from is the understanding that, you know, I'm fallible too, and I've made mistakes too. So that would be one thing, because there's always blame on both sides of the issue. There's always blame on, you know, as somebody said, well, you know, I married a gal that kept running around with other men. Well, then I'd want to see your genogram, because there's a reason why you seem to be drawn toward women that you don't have to respect. Because a healthy man doesn't marry women that he can't respect any more than a healthy woman marries men who don't respect her or she can't respect. The genogram will reveal a lot of those problems. Here are some important things. It's important to try to understand the root of the problem. Why, if I'm a person who's been divorced and I'm looking back at that situation, I want to, why and what did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? And why did I do it? Why did I do that wrong? Why do I have that behavior? Of course, if you're going to fix something, you need to know what you did wrong and why you did it wrong. Why did the other person do what the other person did? And again, without blaming and with forgiveness, you know, I try to understand the other person's, this is part of, we've talked about growing our personalities, is to share the other person's reality, to mm-hmm. understand that. Mm-hmm. Another one would be, is there a plan to avoid repeating the same pattern? That could, counseling can come into to play there. Why do we change? Well, we change because we recognize what it costs us to behave that way. We count the cost. How do we measure the cost? That has something to do with our personal values. So how do we change? And that has to do with having an objective and putting together a specific plan to achieve that objective. So when you get married and you're marrying a person and you know there's dysfunction, you're not going to be able to make course corrections unless you have an objective, something that you're actually leaning toward. Kind of another one is, in order to change your behavior, you have to change your belief. You have to change the way that you see things. talk about the renewing of the mind or a paradigm shift. And that's what I find in a lot of marriages where they're struggling to change. They haven't really seen like the purpose of marriage and the direction that the marriage is supposed to be going.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
It does. And obviously, there's a lot of things you can get into with a Genogram and looking into the family of origin. Very helpful, a strong tool that is used in marriage counseling sessions. Also personal. If you're trying to make some personal changes in your life, you need some life coaching and some counseling. Daniel Pryor is the expert on hand. If people need help, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Call me at 425-778-6169. We can set up an appointment. People also email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
And you have offices?
In Kirkland and Edmonds.
Kirkland and Edmonds. Right. So he's right there for you. Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor. Another great edition of the Sound Mind broadcast here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.